Members, we'll call a meeting to order of the K-12 Education Finance Division. And members, we have a very, very ambitious agenda today. So I will be enforcing time limits and testimony and questions. So I just want all members to know that right off, and the public to know that right offhand. So may I have a, we have a quorum, so may I have a motion to approve the minutes for Tuesday, March 16th of 2010? Representative Garofalo moves approval of the minutes for Tuesday, March 16th, 2010. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails, the minutes are approved. First bill up is HF33018. Representative Newton, would you like to move your bill for possible inclusion in the omnibus K-12 finance bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. This bill deals with...
So Representative Newton moves House File 3308 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus K-12 finance bill. Correct, Representative Newton?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Very good, Representative Newton.
Trying to move it along, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Go ahead, Representative Newton.
This bill deals with health and safety, that every district in the state has someone that's responsible for the health and safety in their buildings. And I had the fortune in District 11 when I was there to be on the Health and Safety Committee for many years and know of some of the issues they have. They're dealing with an overly burdensome statute right now that puts a lot of requirements on school districts. What this bill does is try to simplify the whole process, how we deal with the Department of Education, and to make it easier for our school districts to not only comply with statutes, but to do so in a much more efficient manner. And today, Mr. Chair, I have Mr. Dean Olson, who is the Director of Health and Safety at Osseo School District, and he would like to testify.
Mr. Olson, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dean Olson. I'm the Health and Safety Coordinator for Osseo Schools, Independent School District 279. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today regarding this important legislation. I've been the Health and Safety Coordinator for Osseo Area Schools since 1993. Since that time, the levy process has continued to get more burdensome and complex. Out of frustration with this, I first drafted changes to Minnesota Statute 123B.57 back in 2003. Since then, I've worked with health and safety professionals from other school districts to introduce legislation that would modify this statute in 2006, 2007, 2008, and 2009. Unfortunately, none of these bills were ever heard in committee because of the perceived fiscal impact of expanding the scope of the levy. Even though we continue to feel that these changes are necessary, our current proposal only focuses on reducing the administrative burden in recognition of current economic climate. We are asking you to consider the following, and I provided a summary of the information that's included in the bill. The changes in House File 3308 would enhance the ability of school districts to comply with regulatory obligations and meet the expectations of students, employees, and the communities they serve. The changes would simplify the levy approval process to reduce the administrative burden on districts and MDE. It would allow reporting of multi-building and district-wide projects as a combined total rather than being separated into individual costs per building, eliminate requirement to submit detailed project information not necessary for determining if the work is allowable per statute, allow budgeting for anticipated program costs when the scope of the work is not precisely known or is subject to change, and replace incomplete health and safety plan details that are included in the current statute with a requirement that each district adopt a comprehensive health and safety policy. It would also clarify allowable uses and restrictions without expanding the scope of the levy. We were very careful not to do that this year, concerned that it would be perceived as a cost increase, and so we tried specifically not to do anything that would end up there. It would combine the statutory language with approved uses from MDE's policy letter. It would consolidate allowable uses of health and safety revenue into one subdivision, whereas currently it's kind of throughout the statute, to clean it up a little bit. It would permit districts to identify and correct hazards without waiting for a citation or order. eliminate the requirement for inspection by an outside agency, such as the state fire marshal or OSHA or someone else prior to gaining project approval. It would allow district staff and safety committees to proactively correct recognized hazards, which is a huge thing. It would more accurately account for expenditures by assigning all costs to the proper budget code, which would provide a more accurate reflection of the cost per category. Currently, they're divided up. A lot of the costs that are associated with some of the programs are pushed into Budget Code 352, which is the Health Safety Management Assistance Code, and therefore it's harder to track for us exactly what those costs are. It would ease the burden on the health and safety management category, which is the only one of the categorical funding categories that's capped. It would establish a formal appeals process for project approval, and basically this just moves the appeals procedure from MDE's policy letter into statute. It would block unpromulgated mandates by the Minnesota Department of Education that jeopardize revenue approval. There's currently several things that if they're not done, basically you would lose your ability to levy for health and safety, including mandated management assistance inspections. It would make those optional. Eliminate the requirement for annual school board approval of attachment 99. That would be replaced with the school board policy, health and safety policy, which would be approved once. Eliminate the requirement to conduct an engineering study prior to mold abatement. It's frustrating when you're trying to deal with a situation. You've got water. You don't need to test it. You don't need to an engineering study. You know you need to get it out of there before it continues to grow. And so we'd like to make that a little easier. Eliminate the requirement to conduct an engineering requirement for MDE training and certification to obtain health and safety funding. There are a couple of examples would be the indoor air quality coordinator is required for each district, required to go through MDE training, also for machine guarding. And without that certification, you're not allowed to levy anything under health and safety to correct those hazards. Eliminate the requirement for reapproval of projects that exceed the original cost estimates. A lot of times if we're shooting a year in advance, we're preparing budget estimates. We don't know what the exact cost will be. If it's higher than we originally thought, our feelings, we don't want to lose the project approval just because the cost is more. Again, if it's an allowable project, it's an allowable project regardless of the cost. Also, it would eliminate the square footage cost limit established by MD for playground impact surfacing, again, just to give us more flexibility on the materials and techniques that we use to provide that service. With that, I'd be glad to respond to any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Members, do we have any questions? Representative Dabney? And just so members know that, and public know that came in a little bit late, we have a very ambitious agenda, and so I'm going to be a stickler on the time with questions and testimony, and so we proceed and get everybody in today. So, Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief as I can be. This is a question for staff.
You want me to move the mic a little closer?
So it's not for the testifier, sir. I'm noticing, and I was going to jump up and grab the statute book, really, I was, but you moved to questions so quickly. For staff, I note in the bill summary there's a number of stipulated possible uses of health and safety revenue, and I don't see lead abatement there. And I know that there's older school buildings in use across the state, and I'm wondering, do we believe that we've taken care of lead issues in those buildings, and therefore it's not useful? Is it? Can you explain why I don't see lead there when it's would be a legitimate concern, I would think?
To Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, you may want to ask Mr. Olson-Tomasio this question.
Oh.
Certain lead activities may be covered, but there are a variety of others that are not, and Mr. Olson can probably tell you the latest from the district perspective.
All right. Boomerang.
Mr. Olson?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Dabney, the current language in the statute doesn't include a lot of things that are currently allowed. That's why we're trying to consolidate the allowable uses from the policy letter into statute so that it's a clearly defined what's allowable, what's not. You're not referencing two different documents. Some of the things that we do now for example, along the same lines as your train of thought, hazardous waste disposal, not currently in statute, been doing it for years, need to do it. So again, we're just trying to align everything in one section so it's real clear. If it's not in there, there's a lot that isn't, but we would be glad to entertain those additions. So.
Right. Thank you. Representative
Debney? Thank you.
Representative Debney?
Thank you very much, Representative Ward. I was trying to talk fast, and that went over like a lead balloon. I did have a question for you, and it's a fiscal one, and I know that there's a fiscal note on this. Is this going to be going to the Tax Committee, Representative Newton, after this?
Representative Newton?
Mr. Chair and Representative Depke, we just received the note about an hour ago, and we dispute the figures that are in there. The main figure, the $10,000, is already a part of the policy manual, and it's already being done. So one of the problems that we've had with the department is for the last 2 years, they haven't had anyone in the position of supervising health and safety. And so I think they just hired someone this week. So all these reports, everything that's done is going to the department, but there's no one there to take care of the stuff. So we're going to meet Friday morning with a group of us from the various school districts and the department to go over this just to make sure that there is no fiscal note with this.
Representative Depke.
Thank you, Representative Ward. Just one other follow-up, too. It appears to me that even though we're saving money at the state level, that it is being used as a levy on the local taxpayers, so I am concerned about that it's an automatic pass-through to the local. Is that the intention?
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Depke. It's not necessarily the intention. It's just the way that it happens. We didn't go into this with the intention of trying to raise additional money. We are trying to streamline the system and make it work more efficiently.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow, in the fiscal note it references 123B.75. Is that the property tax recognition shift? It's on page 4, the fourth paragraph down. It says, basically, the justification they're saying.
Mr. Kroll?
Yep.
Mr. Chair Kroll? And Representative Groffalo, members, anytime there's a levy increase, there are shift savings. So you see a savings in the first year relative to the property tax recognition shift. And the fiscal note indicates about $3 million a year annual increase. And so there'll be shift savings on the aid side for the state in the first year. And I don't want to divert us too much on a busy day, but basically whenever there's a levy increase, there are shift savings in the first year, and this the fiscal note indicates that there are levy increase, so there's some shift savings.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, just it's interesting that the department is assuming that the property tax recognition shift is in statute, because it's not in statute right now, and so they are booking a shift based off an administrative ruling, not the statute that they're referencing. So it appears the department's misguided. But just a question for the author. In the fiscal note, it references a levy impact of that'll be doubled to $6.4 million. You mentioned that you disputed the fiscal note. Yeah. Do you dispute that portion of the fiscal note or not?
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Garofalo, we have to look at this. When we need to sit down with the department to look at it. I can't say that we'd necessarily dispute that part of it, but I want them to clarify it. And we received this just about an hour ago and have just had a chance to go through it.
Thank you.
President Grapple, that's it?
Thanks.
There are no other questions at the table here. Are there any public testimony on House File 3308? Is there any other public testimony? Seeing none, House File 3308 will be laid over possible inclusion in the omnibus K-12 finance bill. Thank you, Mr. Olson and Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Right now, we're going to hear House File 3532, Representative Peterson, and Mr. Miller and Ms. Gilbert, please come forward. Representative Peterson, welcome to the committee. Did you have anybody to move your bill, or do you want me to move it?
You move it, please.
I'll move that the House File 3532 be laid over possible inclusion in the omnibus K-12 finance bill. And again, Representative Peterson, welcome, and let's hear from you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This is a pretty easy, simple bill, and it actually saves money for our school districts in the state, which I think everybody's going to be very excited about. Right now, as you know, our students are served. As you look at the overview, you can see that our students get the per pupil aid if they're residents of Minnesota. However, and there are some other exceptions if they're foreign exchange students, and federal law requires school districts to serve all students with an individual education plan, but no similar federal requirement exists for students without an IEP. And we do have a tuition agreement with South Dakota, and it probably would behoove us to try to get tuition agreements with other states, but we don't have that currently. And so this law would say that we are not required to pay tuition bills submitted from other states if we're providing services that don't meet the three criteria. And you can see that in the bill, there's three criteria. If they're not a resident of Minnesota, if they don't have an IEP or an individual education plan, which we are required to serve, and if they don't have a tuition agreement or an agreement to pay the cost of education from the placing authority. And so with that, I'm going to ask Daryl Miller over here, who's Robbinsdale in charge of our special ed. Special Ed, he'll have to give me his other responsibilities.
Mr. Miller, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the tape and proceed with the testimony.
Thank you. My name is Daryl Miller, D-A-R-Y-L, and I am an employee of the Robbinsdale Public Schools. I am the Academic Support Program Director, and that means I work with at-risk youth in all the different programs that we have, including services for students who are placed for care and treatment. And today I am here to testify in support of House File 3532, and I am here to support that bill because I think it will provide some relief to the Robbinsdale School District, specifically in relationship to our obligations to provide educational services for students who are placed by parents primarily in our particular district. We have a residential care and treatment facility called Hazelden. It is a world-renowned treatment program and provides services to students across the country and even from out of the country. And this program, we have a collaborative relationship with them, have worked with them for many years, and we find ourselves now currently looking at some financial issues with regards to the provision of educational services for students who attend there. And I'm speaking specifically about students without disabilities. Most of the students who attend Hazelden are students who do not have disabilities and do not have individual educational program plans. These are students that are placed by parents at that facility, and we provide then general educational programming for those students. These are secondary age students who are working on acquisition of credits and progress toward a diploma. So we are providing diploma programming for those students. In our particular case, the issue that we are faced with is we are experiencing a shortfall in revenue because the students who are non-Minnesota resident students without disabilities do not generate any revenue for the school district. Last year we provided services to 200 students that were residents of the facility, and about 100 of those students were non-Minnesota residents. Those students then were provided services for anywhere from a week up to 120 days, which basically covers their treatment program, and then we are providing educational services for those students during those times. Those students, as I said, do not generate revenue for us, and that creates a problem. Although we see an obligation to provide educational services and work with all students who live within the boundaries of the district so that they can make educational progress, we do see that there is a problem for us as a local school district, because ultimately we are underwriting those services out of the general fund and the dollars that we have available then to serve all of our resident students in the district. So ultimately we are experiencing a shortfall each year in terms of the revenue needed to provide those services. And we're here today because I'm here today in support of the bill for the district, because we see this as an opportunity for the district to receive some potential relief from this problem. We have taken steps as a school district to try to solve this problem on our own. We at this point have developed a tuition agreement that we present to the parents of the non-Minnesota resident students, and we ask them to sign and to commit that they will pay tuition for the educational services for their students. However, there is no guarantee that as non-Minnesota residents that we would be able to collect if they choose not to want to honor the invoice that we send to them for tuition bill.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Ms. Gilbert, you want to introduce yourself for the tape, please, and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and happy St. Patrick's Day. I'm Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools. Just very briefly, this issue comes around about every 5 to 10 years, and because St. Paul is a border city and has hospitals and care and treatment facilities, it's been an issue ongoing for us as well. Some of the biggest offenders are Wisconsin, Iowa, Pennsylvania, even Colorado has refused to pay tuition bills. So St. Paul Public Schools pays over $600,000 of out-of-state payments for kids that are either sent or placed in other states, and we honor that agreement. We do try to do out-of-state tuition billing and tuition agreements, and they're just pretty much universally refused.
Thank you, Ms. Gilbert. Members, any questions? Seeing none. Oh, Representative Depke.
Thank you, Representative Wood. It's my understanding then you are billing the state. Is there a reason why you're not billing the school district that these students are coming from within the other state?
Madam Chair and Representative Depke, that's a good question.
Gilbert.
We've attempted to do both, where we bill the local school district, but in the other states, the districts claim that the educational provisions reside and the responsibility with where the student is getting the education.
Representative Epke?
Excuse that they give.
Thank you. One more question, Representative Ward. You mentioned that this comes up about every 5 or 10 years. What has held this up in the past?
Ms. Gilbert.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Depke, we've talked a couple of times. I know that the state agency has been trying to work with some of the other states to do some kind of interstate contracts with them. So I think every time there's a new administration, there's another kind of go at trying to have some kind of an agreement between the state agencies. Because education is not the only area where this is a problem. As you know, there's been a problem with the higher ed tuition remission. There's a problem with some health and human services as well. But we have been unable to actually get Wisconsin to the table. Like I said, they're one of the biggest ones because of our relationship to them, although we do have quite a few kids who are placed in Iowa as well, but a lot of those are through the courts. So maybe next year will be the charm again, but I think it would send a clear message to them that if we weren't so Minnesota nice, maybe we would get their attention.
Members, any other questions?
Chair Ward, I'd like to
Mr. Miller, just make one comment too.
About the issue of billing, we certainly have attempted to bill homeschool districts as well. One of the things that we found out when working to bill school districts in Wisconsin was that because of how Wisconsin defines resident, they basically say the district that student has come from is not obligated to pay costs for services for students who are out of the state. So that was the message that we got from Wisconsin as we attempted to bill the local school district. So our default then was to go directly to the parent, and our hope is that the parent will honor the tuition agreement.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Members, any other questions? Is there any public testimony on House File 3532? Seeing none, I will move that House File 3532 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus K-12 Finance Bill. Representative Peterson, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thank you, committee members.
We'll now have Representative Bly and half the audience up here, please.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Marquardt.
I'd like to move House File 3120.
Representative Marquardt moves House File 3120 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus K-12 Finance Bill. Representative Bly, I understand that you have an author's amendment. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Members, this is A10-2307 amendment in your packets. May I have a motion to put the bill in the form that the author would like, members?
So move.
Representative Marquardt moves. Moves the amendment, and Representative Bly, would you please tell us about your amendment?
Yes. The amendment actually removes the request for funding, knowing that this is these are difficult times and we probably would not get state funding to do what we want to do. And in discussion with the folks I've been working with, superintendents and others, we believe we can find the funding elsewhere. So that's the reason for the amendment.
Members, are there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Bly, please tell us about your bill and realize that we are going to try to proceed here within about 15 minutes.
Yes. Thank you.
Excuse me, 10 minutes, Representative Bly. I misspoke.
I thought you had a reprieve. You wanted
sorry,
more.
Sorry, Representative Bly. I just got kicked under the table. Sorry.
All right. Okay.
Proceed, Representative Bly.
All right. Let me just say that the germination of this bill comes from thinking about redesign, system redesign, and talking with Representative Marquardt, Representative Eakin, and others like Bob Wadle and Joe Graba, who I've sought counsel from to talk about how we might help schools who are Greater Minnesota or other areas in the state to save money and without reducing the quality of education. Having worked in a small rural school myself, I know the importance of the small schools and the service they provide to students in our state, and I wanted to preserve them as best I could. So an alternative is to say, how can districts get together to try to consolidate in other ways that would save money and not hurt that quality of education that's there? And so I have Bob Wadle, who I'd like to have walk us through the bill, if that's possible.
Very good, Representative. Mr. Wadle, please give your name for the tape and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Bob Wadle. I'm with Education Evolving. And just briefly, I'd like to introduce our forum here. Barb Schmidt is the chair of the Staples School Board. Mark Schmitz is the superintendent. Jerry Neslin is the superintendent of Manoman. Rick Dressen is the superintendent of Edina. And Don Helmstetter, a recent retiree superintendent from Spring Lake Park, would have been here today, but he was forced to spend the month in Florida, so he was not able to join us today. And he sends his deepest apologies. Just quickly, as Representative Bly has indicated, we know we have to do things differently. There certainly is no secret to that. But getting everybody moving forward to do that is a bit more complex. The bill is really focused to save money by better cooperation across school districts and cities and counties, as well as improve academic performance. And that's the direction we have to go. How do we save resources and do better? No one is suggesting because we have a deficit, we'll take a 10% reduction in test scores. I don't hear that policy coming forward. So we've got to figure out how can we really do that. So this bill basically is quite simple. It basically says if your K-12 population is under 5,000, you need to be working more closely with your neighbors and your cities and counties to work on three broad areas. One is how can we be more efficient administratively, and that means superintendents and principals and other administrative services. Second, how can we work together to improve instructional opportunities? And Minnesota, we have a long way to go with the use of technology. We used to be the leader. We're kind of a laggard these days, and we've got to do much better in the use of technology. And then what are other innovative models of schools that we need to be putting into place? And we need to be looking at how do we do extracurricular activities differently as well. So the bill is relatively simple. It says school districts need to come together to work on these particular issues and come up with ways to be more efficient financially, as well as come up with better learning opportunities for students. So, in essence, Mr. Chair, that's really what this bill is really all about.
Thank you, Mr. Wadle, and I'll just go right in order here on my list, Ms. Schmidt. I will say that we have Representative Swells and Representative McFarland that have been working on these issues as well very, very, very strongly. So, let's proceed with testimony, Ms. Schmidt.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
As I've introduced, my name is Barb Schmidt, and I'm chair of the Staples Motley School Board. I have 18 years of experience on the board. I'll start off by saying that I've always been a strong supporter of local control of our school districts, and I believe that this bill supports that position. The bill will require school boards to join together and take the lead in forming education policies, and I believe that that's where the responsibility should be. School districts are provided a lot of flexibility in this bill, yet it provides board members direction and a timeline to start the process. As resources continue to tighten, both at the state and the local level, it becomes even more evident that we must work together to find greater efficiencies throughout our districts. Many of our rural districts have been drastically cutting budgets year after year, taking many educational opportunities away from our students. The time has come for the task force to facilitate greater efficiency and reduce education costs through cooperation with other districts and also cities and counties. Every segment of our society is going through changes to be more effective and improve our efficiencies. I have also owned and operated my own business for 40 years, so I understand what we need to do in that area. And the public expects governmental agencies to do so also. I also have a letter from the mayor of Wadena, Wayne Wolden, and the mayor of Staples, Chris Etzler, asking for your support on this bill. And I'll present this to Representative Bly. And I just, again, thank you for listening, and hopefully you'll consider supporting this.
Thank you, Ms. Schmidt. And we're going to keep on going, members. We've got three more testifiers that I have on mine, and then we have some questions from the members here. So we're going to keep moving. Mr. Neslin.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jerry Neslund, superintendent of Manoman, been a superintendent since 1977. The one thing I want to really talk about in terms of supporting this bill is that while we're, as a superintendent, I'm asking the state to kind of give us a direction that we can start framing efficiencies. And I don't see it as a mandate. I think it's something that we're going to be doing, and we always do planning, as there's planning's required for our leadership and the school board leadership and what have you. But this tends to frame it, and I think gives us an opportunity to move forward. Also, I think I would be expecting some templates, some best practices to come out of this that we can replicate. And my vision for education is to maintain our classrooms, support, build our classrooms, test scores, of course, being part of our issues, and are enhancing our instruction through technology. But maybe we can reduce some of our duplicated costs and protect our classrooms and enhance the learning environment. So again, as a superintendent, I see this as an opportunity. We have a lot of cooperative groups out there. The state doesn't need to tell us who to work with. I think we can find our members. We can kind of lay our own roadmap, and we will come out with some recommendations, and I think it will give us an opportunity to move forward with a stronger model in the future. Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Thank you, Mr. Neslin, and Mr. Schmitz, nice to see you.
Nice to see you too, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for your time and consideration this afternoon. My name is Mark Schmitz. I am superintendent of schools for Staples Motley School District, and I am here to touch bases briefly on the educational aspect of this bill. Much of the bill focuses on the administrative sharing, and Jerry Neslin talked about that very well. It's also important to remember that it's not exclusive of that. When you get people together to start planning administratively, they also begin to start looking at the entire gamut of a system in all the services and programs they offer. I've been a rural superintendent and principal for quite a few years and been through many budget cutting cycles, and a lot of those cycles involve taking programs away from students, particularly at that high school level, offering those courses, offering those opportunities, and we really need to be finding more collaborative ways to offer those. And Bob talked about technology in particular, and perhaps one model to look at is where we begin to having collaborative schools creating hybrid learning opportunities where students are working online and face-to-face with a teacher that an instructor can then cover a broader geographical area, aspects that we really haven't been looking at yet as schools, but this bill would help provide that little bit of a nudge to it. But at the same time, allow schools and communities to maintain their own schools and their own identities, where consolidation has kind of lost that over the years. But this is kind of hopefully a blend that allows your efficiencies, but provides that individual and identity of our rural schools. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Schmitz. And then Mr. Dressen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I am Rick Dressen, Superintendent of Edina Public Schools. I've also had the opportunity to serve in other educational leadership roles in the communities of St. Joseph, Brooklyn Center, Waconia, and Alexandria. Simply, I would say Edina would not be one of the school districts that would be required to participate, but Edina would be among those first to sign up because we, too, see the benefits. I don't think this is a size bill. This is an opportunity bill. This is also an opportunity where we're not looking at another level of middle management, another level of bureaucracy. This is people coming together. And I think this bill also provides coverage for those entities, those public schools, those public agencies, when their constituents may not want us to leave our silos and become collaborative. This provides that opportunity, and sometimes we need that to force better solutions. And so with that, I would encourage you to support the bill, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Dressen. And we have four members that have questions right now, and we need to be done by 25 after, so we're going to move. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions. Representative Bly, why 5,000 students? So why did you pick that number?
Representative Bly.
Would you like to take that?
There's nothing magic with that number. That's about 300 300 districts. With districts over that, they have pretty much infrastructure in place to be able to deliver what they really need to do by themselves. But that's why we put the issue in there that they may want to participate. We would hope that they would. And Dr. Dressen is saying, yeah, you bet we will. And as I discussed this with other superintendents, they're saying, yeah, we all need to do this because, frankly, Minnesota has no large school districts. If Minneapolis were in Florida, it would be the smallest school district in the state. So we really all need to be working together.
Thank you, Mr. Weddle. Representative Demmer?
Thank you. Representative Bly, another question. Is there anything here that you're asking for that districts can't do right now?
Representative Bly?
I think they probably could do it, but what we're saying is that we want them to engage in this conversation, and we're going to expect some outcome from it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My last question and then a comment. Which school districts, and if you looked at a cost per student of school districts in the state of Minnesota, have you done that? And what would you find in terms of the cost per student of educating kids in the state of Minnesota in terms of which schools, districts, the demographics of the school districts that seem to have the lowest cost per student?
Representative Bly?
Do you know that, Representative Bly?
No, I have not done that research, but do you have something you want to inform me of?
As a matter of fact...
Representative Demmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bly, as a matter of fact, I do. The school districts that you're targeting to do this are already the lowest cost school districts on a per student basis. School districts that I represent down in southern Minnesota are sometimes up to half the cost of the larger school districts that you're talking about. I see this, and quite frankly, I think it's ridiculous. And that's my honest opinion. I think people can do this if they want to. I served on a school board 11 years. We did spend time collaborating with local school districts. We have paired. We have done things that need to be done. We look at that. I think they can make these decisions for themselves. I think it should be reversed. I think probably the larger school districts should be required to be doing this because that's where the high cost of educating our kids is. The smaller school districts in this state, and I'm talking about school districts of 1,000 kids and under, are probably the most efficient school districts we have that are the lowest cost per student and, by the way, have very high outcomes when you look at test scores. So I think maybe we need to reverse this and say the larger school districts must collaborate and find ways to reduce their costs. And the smaller school districts that are already doing it, leave them alone.
Thank you, Representative Emmer. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bly, two comments. One, you represent district, a large part of your district that includes Scott County, and Scott County already has this type of organization that came together voluntarily. I hope that this legislation doesn't add additional burdens to scale, so I hope you've looked at it with that point of view. The other thing, Representative Bly, this bill does indeed create a task force, and I know you're a stickler for the rules, so if this bill does go into Representative Greiling's omnibus bill, it will probably have to make a stop in state gov ops.
Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Representative Demmer and Diskins have covered my concern.
Thank you. Representative Swales.
I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Swales. Representative Depke, last member question.
Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Ward. Couple of things. We have spent actually 2 years listening to shared services bills in this this committee and in our policy committee. And we had, I was just wondering, Representative Bly, why we didn't hear this bill in policy. We spent probably an entire session in policy on a shared services bill, which is currently going through. That's one question. And then also, I just wanted to know what shared services cooperative is in your area for this bill.
Representative Bly?
Well, first, I would
quickly
have been,
Representative Bly.
I would have been very happy to have the bill heard in the policy committee. We were unable to get it into the schedule, and Representative Greiling, Chair Greiling, was willing to hear the bill. And I also got permission from Representative Chair Mariani to do that. As to whether or not there's a, I know that there has been an ed district in my legislative district, I guess I would say in response to Representative Demmer as well that when we talk about a system redesign or collaboration of districts, oftentimes it's the smaller districts that get forced into consolidation, and you get loss of schools and communities. And really my effort includes a desire to preserve those small schools and allow districts to come together and talk about other ways of consolidating other than the consolidating school buildings or school classrooms.
Thank you, Representative Bly. Is there any public testimony on House File 3120? Seeing none, House File 3120 will be laid over as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus K-12 finance bill. Thank you. We'll call forward Representative Fritz with her testifier, Linda Mitchell. Representative Fritz, we'll have about 10 minutes as well, Representative Fritz, hopefully faster than that. President Fritz, do you have anybody to move your bill yet, or can I move it for you?
If you'd move it for me, I'd appreciate it.
So the chair moves House File 2962 be laid over for possible inclusion in the K-12 omnibus finance bill. She has an author's amendment that is an oral amendment, Representative Fritz, and I think it didn't meet the 24-hour deadline, if I understand correctly.
Correct.
So, members, does anybody have objection to this oral amendment that did not meet the 24-hour deadline?
I like it.
So, hearing none, Representative Fritz,
yes.
Do you want to move your oral amendment? Give us your oral amendment, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move the oral amendment, and it is after the State Academy, the last word of the language that you have in front of you. If you would insert, if agreement is reached to continue the placement.
Okay, Representative Fritz, would you please start again on which line are we talking
the
on?
Last
on,
line.
On 217.
The very
2.17. 2.17. Go ahead, Representative Fritz.
Okay, and after the period.
After the period.
Next sentence. If agreement is reached to continue the placement beyond the trial period, comma, transportation and due process responsibilities remain as in the trial period outlined above. And I can repeat that if you need.
Okay, Representative Fitz, please repeat that one more time.
If agreement is reached to continue the placement beyond the trial period, comma, transportation and due process responsibilities remain as in the trial period outlined above.
Okay, members, do you have that?
Everybody have it?
All right. May I have a motion to put the bill in the form that the author wants with that oral amendment included?
So moved.
Been moved. Is there any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Representative Fritz, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Thank you for having us back again. I have with me today the superintendent of the Minnesota State Academies for the Deaf and Blind Schools in my hometown of Faribault, Ms. Linda Mitchell, and I have Ms. Ward, the director of special education from the State Academies as well. This is a language bill, and some of you who are on the policy committee know how we brought this before you. This is our next stop. The language has been worked out and worked on, and you have that before you. This is about placing a child who resides in Minnesota and meets the disability criteria to have a trial period of 60 days in the Minnesota State Academies for the Deaf and Blind. And I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Mitchell, who will be brief and who will explain the bill.
Thank you, Ms. Mitchell. And please give us your name for that tape, and then proceed with your testimony as brief as possible.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I am Linda Mitchell, the superintendent of the State Academies. I don't know if I can talk fast enough for this committee.
That was good, Ms. Mitchell. Is that
it? No
more. Sorry. Proceed, please.
To give you a little bit of background, the way children access the Minnesota State Academies has been through the IEP process. That has involved the three-legged stool, the school districts, the families of the child, and the academy staff. What this bill will do is allow the parents to have an option in which they can initiate the process, and after making application with approval by the academy staff, if we decide that, yes, they meet criteria and this could be an appropriate placement, we would then involve the school districts and set up the 60 to 90 day trial placement. We want you to know we've worked very closely with the special ed directors in the state to craft this, because we recognize and we work with them all the time, and recognize that we didn't want to leave them on the hook for the due process responsibilities when they didn't have a say in the decision. And so during that trial placement, the Minnesota State Academies does assume the due process responsibilities. And I have to say, the reason for the last amendment that we added today was that we followed through, okay, if agreement isn't reached, this is what happens, that the child would go back to the district. We had not spelled out, although we assumed, that if we did agree and the child stayed at the academies, that we would continue the due process responsibilities. So that's the explanation for the amendment.
Thank you, Ms. Mitchell. Thank you. And is it Ms. Ward?
Yes.
You're lucky. You take as much time as you like, Ms. Ward. No.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ward.
Ms. Ward, please proceed.
Can you believe that? I really don't have anything to add.
Okay, very good.
Very good.
Even better, Ms. Ward. Thank you very much.
I want to know.
Members, are there any questions? Seeing no questions, are there any public testimony for House File 2962? Ms. Mitchell, I did have one question.
Yes, sir.
The trial period, is that considered a intervention? Is that considered a intervention prior to the IEP being implemented? Ms. Mitchell?
Mr. Chair, no, it's not really an intervention. It is a decision. It is an IEP placement decision, and it is a trial, but it's not an intervention.
Okay. Any other questions, members? All right. Seeing none, the House File 2962 will be laid over as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus K-12 finance bill.
Yes.
Thank you, Representative Fritz and testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Chairman and members, thank you very much.
Ms. Representative Norton. With Representative Depp, Representative Detmer is joining her, I think, correct? And two testifiers, Dr. Geese and Mr. Orwell. Representative Norton, we've been going at a pretty rapid pace, and that will continue. We have a major bill at the end here, so you have about 10 minutes for everything. Representative Norton, Representative Demmer, do you want to move the bill?
I moved House File 3115.
Be laid over for possible inclusion?
Yes.
In the omnibus K-12 finance bill. And Representative Norton, you have an author's amendment for this bill, is that correct?
I do have an author's amendment that has some technical clarifications and also addresses concerns of the School Board Association and the Department of Ed.
Very good, Representative Norton. Members, this is H3115A3 amendment in your packets.
And Mr. Chair?
May I have a motion to put the bill in the form the author wants?
Yes.
Bless you. It's been moved move the amendment to put the form in the author wants. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Representative Norton, would you please tell us about your bill?
We already did
the amendment.
But first I'd like to tell you that with the amendment, you have just, we've addressed the fiscal note with that, and the only cost left in the bill is expedited rulemaking, which is about $13,900. So we've taken care of the rest of the fiscal note with that amendment. So I wanted you to know that before we started. The bill itself, I have two testifiers, so I'm just going to quickly let you know a little bit about the bill. This is a different bill than you've seen in the past, which is why I'm going to spend just a moment. It comes as a result of some interim work that we did on the Childhood Obesity Task Force, and it has a few main components. The first is the adoption of statewide education standards based on the national standards. Currently, we have local standards, but it has flexibility in that districts will have up to 2012-13 school year to make those adoptions. Second, it has a non-controversial requirement that that districts will post the wellness policy on their websites if available. We are encouraging, again at no cost, the Department of Education to create recess guidelines for schools in an attempt to reduce behavior problems, engage kids in more physical activity. We have an agreed-to provision with the Department of Education to track FIA classes and local PE requirements through the Common Core, posting it on the Common Core catalog. And then last, we have a Healthy Kids Award program, which will be voluntary. School districts can choose to participate, and by doing so, they could be recognized on the report card. So that's just a quick highlight of the bill, and I'll let my testifiers speak next.
Very good, Representative Norton. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you want to introduce yourself, please, for the tape. It's nice to see you again, and proceed with your testimony.
I'm Jack Alwell. I'm an elementary physical education teacher in Farmington, Minnesota, North Trail Elementary specifically, and have been so for the last 32 years. I will try and speak quickly. Not long ago, baseball great Mickey Mantle died at the age of 63. Before passing, he quipped, "If I'd have known I was going to live this long, I'd have taken better care of myself." The statement was actually borrowed from Bobby Lane, another athlete who ignored health warnings until it was too late. Today, an entire generation is confronted with such warning signs. We have become a nation at risk because we are a nation at rest. This crisis is due in large part to our poor nutrition and sedentary lifestyle. Not only has it undermined our nation's health and economic stability, but it has had a dire effect on our students' ability to learn. Two landmark studies have demonstrated a direct link between fitness and academic achievement. In 2002, the state of California compared over 1 million students' Stanford Achievement standardized test scores with their FitnessGram physical fitness scores, and they found a direct linear relationship between the level of fitness and the standardized test scores. The 2009 Texas Youth Fitness Study compared the fitness levels of 2.6 million students with academic scores, absenteeism, and school behavior. The study isolated two fitness components that had direct correlation with test scores. Higher levels of cardiovascular fitness were associated with higher test scores, and higher BMI scores, which is body mass index, were associated with lower scores. In other words, overweight children tend to do worse than their peers. Fitter kids also had higher attendance and fewer behavioral issues. Recent brain research has created a surprising shift in tactics in the war against flagging test scores. The battle for academic achievement is now being waged in a new setting, the school gymnasium. A 2007 study of 200 overweight school children in Augusta, Georgia found aerobic exercise training showed dose response benefits for executive function. That is, academic improvements were directly related to the amount of exercise that the student received. This I find stunning. Anthony Elementary School in Leavenworth, Kansas was ranked 9th in math and 10th and last in reading in their district. In a bold move, the school revamped their lunch program and increased PE from once to 5 days a week. The results were immediate and startling. After the first year, Anthony ranked number 1 in math and number 2 in reading. And not coincidentally, there was a 1,300% increase in students passing the fitness test. An unanticipated benefit also saw office referrals drop from 438 to just 18 in 1 year. Last year at this time, we reported to you the remarkable achievements of the 4th and 5th grade students enrolled in North Trail Elementary in Farmington in a class known as Literacy PE. This was a voluntary class for struggling 4th and 5th grade readers, students identified as below grade level in reading on the NWEA standardized test. Each of our sessions was 15 minutes long and immediately preceded their normally scheduled reading class. It involved vigorous activities and games with embedded reading components. In order to succeed, the student had not only to give a full physical effort, but also had to unravel or solve varied cognitive challenges. The results were stunning. In late January, following the 9-week class, students were again administered the NWEA test, and LitPE participants showed an average increase of 5 times the national average, but more to the point, they improved at 3 times the rate of their peers, that is District 192 fourth and fifth graders, and almost twice the Title I average. These improvements have held steady for each of the 3 years the class has been held. This year we offered a math PE class and found that our kids outpaced their peers by a wide margin. Jean Blades Madigan said, "The brain can only be as healthy as the body that carries it. As the research has demonstrated, the same thing that makes us physically healthy also makes us able to achieve in the classroom. Fitness is not accidental. It is the intentional product of a well-planned program of activity. Inactivity is the enemy of our kids' bodies and minds. With each passing year, an overweight youngster has a lower chance of returning to normal body weight. By the time he or she is 13, she has only a 14% chance of returning to a normal body weight. By the time he or she turns 18, there's only a 5% chance. Now is clearly the time to act, and passage of this legislation, we believe, is the first step in the long battle to save the minds and bodies of our kids."
Thank you, Mr. Ella. Dr. Geis?
Stephen Geis, principal at North Trail Elementary. Prior to that, I was a secondary principal. I had an 8-9 building. There we established and had PE offered where the students did take it every day. However, it takes leadership from the top. And unfortunately, after I left, it was no longer a priority. And that's why we're here today asking for you to take the leadership on that. At North Trail Elementary, the statistics would show that our demographics that we should be ranking in the bottom of the 4 other elementaries. However, the last 3 years running, our school has performed at the top. Now, that could be due to a lot of variables, but the one variable that I attributed to is that this not only excellent teaching, but that the students have PE every day. And what a wonderful benefit that's been. The other interesting thing is that there's a Minnesota promise talking about the world-class schools and a world-class state, that you have all these groups, and I just want to cite a couple of them. The Association of Metropolitan School Districts, Minnesota Administrators of Special Education, the Minnesota School Board Administrators, Association of Secondary School Principals, Elementary Principals, and the Minnesota School Board Association. In their last statement, they're talking about on Essential 10, health and wellness, to maintain and increase support for physical education classes that help students develop a positive lifelong approach to exercise, nutrition, and other elements of health and wellness. That's why your assistance is needed in passage of this piece of legislation.
Thank you, Dr. Geis. President Norton, I have one question. I've had this bill for a couple years, and I know when I did the Plyad bill, rulemaking through the department was there was no fiscal note on it. Why is it $13,000 right now? You know what? Representative Norton?
I do not know, except I can tell you, Mr. Chair, that during the summer, as we had the hearings for this, we were told there's some new staff at the department and that there would be a small fiscal note. And in fact, and part of it is because it's an expedited rulemaking process, but it is small. And I think hopefully the department can either swallow that, or Representative Greiling will have a way to squeak in that little bit. And Mr. Chair, if I could ask, this it was a bipartisan effort on our committee, and Representative Detmer has been very active, and he'd like to say a few words if you would allow that.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. And I just want to briefly emphasize 2 points. Number one, the first point is that the fiscal note with the amendment you just passed is only part of part of the fiscal note. You should consider the cost of expediting the rulemaking is nearly $14,000, so it's very low. All the other costs have been eliminated to be very minimal. Now, my second point, please look at the second page of your handout, which is the shows the PEP winners. Please take a look at that, because the handout describes the U.S. Department of Education Kira White's physical education program. You see that how the fiscal benefits are having statewide physical education standards are literally outweighing the rulemaking costs. After 2003, the statewide physical education policies in Minnesota were eliminated, and the number of grants our school districts declined to a point where Minnesota received no funds in 2006 and 2009. But 47 other states, including our neighbor states of North Dakota and South Dakota and Wisconsin, continually to qualify for these grants and for these statewide standards. So with each passing year, Minnesota does not have the statewide standards of PE. We are denying our students millions of dollars in our schools. And as you know, Mr. Chair, I've been carrying this bill for the last, or been co-authoring now for the last 4 years. And we have tried very hard over the years to make this bill as fiscally neutral and mandate-free as possible. What it comes down to is a cost of nearly $14,000 by the state and returns of millions of dollars of federal funds go directly to our schools. And we know that budgets are lean in our schools, and we feel that the work that we've done in this bill has made it as mandate-free and fiscal responsible as possible. And I just want to leave it with this note. I know we have elevators in this building, and I don't want to see people line up that elevator. If you don't have to take the elevator, use the stairs. And the majority party, you are in floors 3, 4, and 5, correct? So you should be in better shape than we are on the second floor.
Thank you, Representative.
So use those stairs.
Thank you for the work that you all have done on this, and Representative Norton, for the work that you guys have done on the childhood obesity as well in the summer. Representative Marquardt, the question, then we're going to the end here.
Very good. I have a question on what the superintendents think about this, Mr. Chair. I mean, this, we've got a bill coming up here that is going to reduce school district mandates, and, of course, this is adding one. So I don't know if the superintendents have a position on this, and what's the difference of this mandate with the other ones?
Representative Norton or anybody up the table? Ms. Doslin, do you know? You want to come in and give us the feedback, please? Give us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Doslin, and I represent the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and we do not have a position on this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Doslin. Okay. Is there any other public testimony on 3115? Seeing none, the House File 3115 will be laid over possible inclusion in the Omnibus K-12 Finance Bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll now have Representative Benson with House File 3478. Mr. Solomon and Mr. Kroonquist. Benson, would you like to move your bill, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 3478 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus K-12 Finance Committee bill.
And you have an author's amendment for this bill?
I do have an amendment.
Mr. Benson?
H3478A10.
May I have a motion, members, to put the bill in the form that the author wants?
And I also, Mr. Chairman, have a small oral amendment. May I do that at the same time?
To the amendment.
And if members would turn to page 10 of the bill, lines 10.23, it reads presently years 2010 through 2014. I would like.
Representative Benson, we are on an oral amendment to the amendment. Is that correct?
That's correct.
We're on the A10 amendment, members. We're on the A10 amendment. And Representative Benson has an oral amendment to the amendment.
Have we moved the amendment yet?
Is that all right?
You have to move the amendment first.
Can we move the amendment first? Maybe then.
Let's do A10 first, members. Representative Benson, we're going to do 8.
Sounds great.
Do the 810 first.
It'll put in the language
okay.
That we prefer.
Members, are there any discussion on the 810 amendment? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Benson, now tell us about your oral amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
To 810.
On page 10 of the original amendment on lines 10.23, I would like to change the add an amendment,
okay.
Oral amendment, so that would read years 2010 and then restore the two that are two words that have been crossed out and 2011 and then remove the language that says through 2014.
So
it would read years 2010 and 2011. Only.
Members, do you all have that? And this is to the bill. Excuse me. It's not to the amendment. It's not to the 810. This is to the bill. Representative Benson, will you please repeat that one more time?
Sure. On page 10, line 10.23, we will remove the language that says through 2014 and replace it with and 2011. So it would read years 2010 and 2011 only.
Members, do we have that now? Is that clear? Is there any discussion or questions on that? All those in favor of that amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That is carried. Representative Benson, would you please tell us about your bill now?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a mandate reduction bill. Which was produced by a working committee on which Representative Tilbury and I served as chairs. And we visited with all kinds of stakeholders and came up with a number of items which met the requirements or the charge that we received from Chair Greiling. And the contents we could go through, but I would like Representative Tilbury first to outline those requirements that we worked under.
One of the things,
Representative Tilbury,
Mr. Chair, we went over within the last session that we were at. We decided to do this. If you recall, we had 18 different mandates that we removed, and once again, we went through and had testimony from all different groups, different people throughout. And the different concerns that happened, and you can imagine the way that meeting went half the time as we went through that. But we got the low-hanging fruit on this particular piece early on. But we had three guiding principles that were given to us as our charge for the working group. The first one was that if a member had a bill that specifically went to a mandate reduction, we did not hear that in the working group because we figured that it was on its own and it would work in that manner. The second one that we considered was no contractual items. We had that into consideration. And then the third one was we had no special ed mandates required in this because of Representative Newton's work on what he was doing at that time. We carried these three principles in based on the chair of the K-12 finance, and we went with that this time around and came up with some more mandate reduction pieces.
Thank you, Representative Tilbury. And Representative Garofalo?
Yeah, Mr. Garofalo, and I want to, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. Okay, I want to apologize here because there's been a misunderstanding in custom in this committee that just took place. The 810 amendment, I certainly want to give deference to the author to put the bill in his form. When I'm in a committee and a member says, well, I want to put this bill into my intent and what I want, I generally give deference to the author on that. I did not realize that the maintenance of effort discussion was included in that amendment and just got blown out of there. Again, I respect the fact that the author is going to have the votes on this committee and you're going to win on that issue. It'll be revisited in future committees. I'm not going to move reconsideration right now. I'm not going to do that. I just want members of the committee to understand, at least from this member's perspective, when you're presenting a bill and it's presented in that fashion, that is kind of code for this is non-controversial. I'm reorganizing things. This is a big amendment. This is a big deal. I don't think the author intended to sneak anything by. Again, you've got the votes in the committee. I'm not going to dispute that. I just wish we would have had a more thoughtful analysis of that amendment, Mr. Chairman. Again, I'm not going to move reconsideration, but just for future for members, for future sake.
Representative Dabney? Representative Dabney?
Mr. Chair, thank you, and to my friend, Representative Garofalo, I just want to respectfully disagree. I think what I was taught here by Representative Krinke was you can hate the amendment, you let the guy have the bill that he wants. And, you know, yes or no on the substance of the Benson Amendment, the A-10, I think the custom and usage in this committee and in this body is you let the guy have the bill that he wants, and then, or girl, whichever the case may be. Thank you, Representative Dietrich. And then you vote for, you know, up or down on the bill. You offer an amendment to reverse what we just did. There's options always.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Benson, is your testimony for the bill testifiers with you?
There will be testifiers, yes. Some are for and some are in opposition.
So. Kate, do you want to... anything else you want to talk about your bill, well, Representative Benson, before we go to testifier?
Maybe we could do a quick walkthrough with the bill, if anyone feels that's necessary. It has been perused a lot already. But basically, give me that top sheet.
Yep.
It involves a number of items. There are several in here. One of them is dealing with the length of the school year, that is, days of instruction. It, however, maintains the hours of instruction, and its purpose is to help those districts that are going to be in financial straits, as most of them are, who may need, in order to complete the year, go to a four-day week. This would allow them to do that. A second part of this bill concerns permanent fund transfers, and my amendment did change that slightly, but the objective is to allow school districts to move funds as they see fit, with some exceptions, and those exceptions are in there for a lot of reasons. Probably the most obvious one is I want the bill to pass, but the most important part that still remains is it allows school districts to move capital funds, for example, into operating fund, and that is the big one. We are making sure that the district still meets its obligations for debt service and now community education and adult basic education have been returned to the bill. The third item has to do with lengthening the time restraints on line of credit borrowing by school districts and the amount that they can borrow. And we are feeling that also is essential right now with the budgetary constraints that we have. And the third one has, or the fourth one then, has to do with publishing requirements. And again, all these include May. There are no directives. It simply allows the school districts to do as they feel they need to. And it is a classic example of trying to move some of this decision-making back to the local level. And this is always a leap of faith in any institution to give up its authority and directive. This is something that, whether it's a president or a Congress or a state legislature, always resists. So as Representative Tilbury said in his remarks, we've already gone through the low-hanging fruit. Now we're a little bit higher up on the tree, but it's still only a three-step ladder at this point. And depending on who gets reelected and come back, I hope people will get a six-foot ladder next time and move a little bit farther up that tree. As the legislature continues to add mandates, many times without funding, this working group's job is to try to pick some of that fruit and put it back in the basket again. So,
thank you, Representative Benson. Do we have on our list Jeff Solomon? And we have one more bill to do yet, so we need to, we have another amendment, so that we need to you know, proceed quickly. Mr. Solomon, go ahead. Introduce yourself for the tape, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeff Solomon. I'm Director of Finance and Operations for the Rosemont Apple Valley Eagan Public Schools. Our district is a member of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts and Schools for Equity in Education. I'm also a member and current vice president of the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. And on behalf of my district and these organizations, I'm here to testify in favor of House File 3478, but the original bill, I think, before the amendments. We are supportive of the bill as it was originally presented because it provides for more flexibility and local control for school districts. Specifically, this bill would have provided districts with some real mandate relief by repealing the maintenance of effort requirements in the Safe School Levy statute, by allowing the school year to begin before Labor Day, by allowing districts more flexibility in determining the length of the school year, and by waiving the staff development set aside through the 2014. This bill, as originally presented, provided a local elected officials to make decisions beneficial for their schools while being accountable for their local public. The Rosemont Apple Valley Eagan School District is particularly interested in the provision which would have repealed the maintenance of effort requirement that is currently part of the Safe Schools Levy. We recognize the tremendous support that provided by our students by licensed school counselors, social workers, nurses, and psychologists. However, in times like these, when school districts across our state are being forced to reduce budgets, we do not believe it is wise to require districts to maintain spending from year to year for these and any other positions in our budget. This year, our Safe Schools Levy revenue is approximately $950,000. That's $30 per pupil of local levy authority. And current statute requires that a minimum expenditure of that $33 per pupil, which in our case is $95,000, be dedicated for the expenditures toward licensed support staff.
Mr. Solomon, can you wrap it up, please?
I will briefly. Our expenditures for the staff positions projected through Safe Schools MOE language exceeds $6,700,000 annually, and the MOE language currently in law requires our school district to maintain that $6,700,000 expenditure level while only being funded for $950,000. We were strongly in support of House File 3478, and on behalf of our school district, MASBO, C, and AMSD, we ask committee members to have supported the bill as it was presented originally. We're not supportive of amendments that would remove some of the mandate relief provisions. It's our hope that the state will approve the bill, allowing more flexibility and control at the local school level.
Thank you, Mr. Solomon. Mr. Kronquist?
He may choose not to testify unless there's questions.
Very good. Thank you. Is there any other public testimony? All right, members. Oh, Mr. Lundell.
You know, just briefly, Mr. Chair, Jeff is a member of...
Mr. Lundell, you identify yourself.
My name is Brad Lundell. I'm Executive Director of Schools for Equity and Education. And just briefly, in 30 seconds, when I get up here and testify a lot, it's almost like I need a rocking chair and whittling. I mean, because I'm talking about the old days all the time. But having been around here a lot, the one thing that frustrates me is there's a lot of talk about mandate relief. And it's every year there's talk about mandate relief. And this bill had some big mandate relief in it. And it's with poof, turn around, it's gone. There are some good things in this bill. We will support this bill. But this bill was much better about 15 minutes ago. And I think that's a very frustrating for all of us in the school community.
Thank you, Ms. Lundell. Is there any other public testimony? Members, there is another amendment, and it's an amendment that I have. It's an A9 amendment. Somebody else? Oh, right. Okay. Go ahead. Proceed. Please give your name for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I represent the Congress of Minnesota Resorts. We oppose the change in Section 1. We don't think it has any link to improve learning outcomes. We think there are other efforts that you can make to improve learning, and we think that change has a detrimental impact to a large segment of Minnesota that we think you should consider first. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Anybody else? Members, I have an A9 amendment. I'm going to move my amendment, my H3478A9. Does everybody have a copy of the amendment? Okay, members, I want to explain the amendment. I've been the one that's pushing the time, so I'm going to be as brief as possible. This removes the section that would allow for a flexible schedule to include a pre-Labor Day school start. For many of us in greater Minnesota, this is all about jobs. This is all about our economy. This is all about, our areas that rely on tourism so much for our small businesses. The other thing I want members to be aware of is recently the governor and Commissioner Segrin allowed for 25 school districts in the state, in southwestern state corner, to have a pre-Labor Day start. I offer this to you. Let's wait and see what happens with those 25 school districts. That's a pilot kind of situation. So let's see if there is, in fact, student achievement gain because of a pre-Labor Day start. There's little data that shows that there is, and data that shows just the reverse of that. So I'm not going to belabor it anymore, members. I ask for your support on this amendment for the A9 amendment. Representative Enzelk, I know that you had your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Seems like we were just here, and it never seems to go away. You never quit.
Well, look at me. It's not my amendment.
We are in finance committees all day long, making terrible decisions, hurting good people. And the change as is contemplated here with the Labor Day start literally is an attack on one-third of northern Minnesota's economy. This change hurts the state of Minnesota. A change that hurts the state of Minnesota's revenue collection. A change that hurts revenue collection to adequately fund the schools. We can't cut our way out of this. We can't tax our way out of this. We grow our way out of this with increased revenue. Why would you make it harder for the state to collect revenue off a tourism economy that is already weakened by the overall recession? I support Representative Ward's amendment.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Dabney?
Mr. Ward.
Hang on, please. Representative Dabney, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to respond to Mr. Carlson of the Congress of Minnesota Resorts. I trust the members of the Congress of Minnesota Resorts to run resorts. I'd also like to see us trust school boards and school superintendents to run schools. And with that, I'd ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Benson?
Mr. Chair, a little history on this particular amendment in the K-12 Policy Committee. Representative Norton introduced this amendment. I happen to be in favor of the purpose of the amendment. I asked the representative not to bring this amendment because I called it a poison pill. Because there will be a number of persons like yourself who will find it not helpful. I had asked that amendment not be added. I considered it an unfriendly amendment. And although I'm very much in favor of allowing districts to start school when they wish, and I have voted for it in the past, I did not want it on this particular bill, so I will be supporting the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Benson. And so, members, you're voting an aye as a support of the amendment and a nay as...
I have a question.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Benson, I'm reading here on Section 1 that the district's line 15, a district must not schedule a student instruction day on Thursday or Friday immediately preceding Labor Day.
Yes.
So basically, there's no school for students prior to Labor Day, but there is some teacher workshops.
Representative Benson?
On Thursday and Friday.
Mr. Chair, this was part of the Norton amendment, and she explained to me that she did that as a way to make her amendment more palatable. As I just stated to the committee, it was not an amendment which I had wished to have on this mandate reduction bill. I find it to be making passage more difficult. I had asked the author of the amendment to present a stand-alone bill. She chose not to, so I do not take ownership.
Thank you, Representative Benson. And we're going to go right to the vote, members. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Greiling?
No.
Ward?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Enzels?
Yes.
Benson?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Biskins? Daphne?
No.
Demmer?
No.
Detmer?
No.
Dietrich?
Yes.
Depke?
No.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Mariani?
No.
Marquardt?
Yes.
McFarlane?
No.
Morgan?
No.
Newton?
Yes.
Slocum?
Yes.
Swales?
No.
Tilbury?
Yes.
With a vote of 11 to 9, the motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Is there any further discussion of the bill? House File 3478, as amended, is laid over possible inclusion in the omnibus K-12 finance bill. We got the last bill of the day, members. Representative Morgan says he needs about 4 or 5 minutes. Representative Morgan, House File 3123. Would you move your bill to recommend...
Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 3123 be recommended to pass and refer to the Finance Committee with re-referral to the Health and Human Services Finance Committee.
And you have an author's amendment for the bill, I believe. Is that correct?
I do, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the DE3 amendment. I guess we can go ahead, if you would, and Representative Garofalo doesn't object, if we could go ahead and adopt this and get it in the order that I wish, and then I'll have Ms. Gilbert, who's here,
very
to explain
good.
It.
Members, you have the DE3 amendment in your packets. May I have a motion to put the bill on the floor, and the author wants. So moved. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Representative Morgan, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. If you remember, folks, 2 weeks ago I had several testifiers here to talk to you about third-party billing and what it is and what it meant to school districts. If we could streamline that process, get the cost of the health care that school districts are providing being paid by the health care providers, essentially, whether it's a private insurer or a public insurer, get those costs out of the school district. The school districts could get that money then into the classroom and provide the education services we want our education funding to be providing. We believe with this DE3 amendment, we have fixed some of the issues that DHS has asked us to address. We have in our possession a letter from Commissioner Ludeman that says they still have some concerns. Now that it is amended, it will, as it moves along to Health and Human Services Finance, we'll get a fiscal note. That fiscal note obviously will not be for this committee. It will be for the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. We'll have testimony there, and we will continue to work with DHS on any concerns that they have. I have Ms. Gilbert here from St. Paul Schools, who can maybe talk briefly about the amendment and what it does, and perhaps answer any questions in the next minute or so.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. Ms. Gilbert, please identify yourself.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, but I can't remember my name today. Barry Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools. Very briefly, Section 1 of the bill is just making it clear that when parents are notified, both initially when a school district intends on billing medical assistance and annually, that it'll be clear in the consent, and it really is now, but we're just making it clear in statute. That the parents receive information that they know that they can have copies of any records that are shared and that they can withdraw their authority to consent at any time. That's Section 1. Section 2 of the bill was deleted, is no longer in the bill, because the meeting with the Department of Human Services made it clear that the settle-up period really couldn't be changed, and that any more delay would actually be a detriment to school districts. The language on page 3.
Got another one.
This is what we're still working with the department on, but we've addressed some of their concerns about the cost of doing a new application. Last year in the Human Services Committee, there was a provision that required that the state come up with a new, shorter form. If any of you have had complaints from your constituents that the Minnesota Care and MA form is like 18 or 30 pages long, the department right now is currently working on a shorter form that's easier for folks to fill out. And so upon the development of this new material, so the forms would be reprinted anyway, there would be a provision in there that would include the opportunity for a parent to consent. And the consent is not for billing. The consent is just simply to share the student record for the purposes of billing. And it's something that they've done in Virginia. And as Representative Morgan said, the commissioner has indicated that they are willing to work with Virginia to see how they've achieved this. And they've done it in a relatively low-cost way, because they actually changed their form when they were in the process of doing a reprinting of one. The third section is the third-party billing provision, and that's the department has committed to do this, where they're going to get some clarification from CMS so that school districts will not have to bill third-party payers anymore. We have 10 years of history that third-party payers are not paying for any of these health-related services.
Thank you, Ms. Gilbert. Members, are there any questions? Is there any public testimony on House File 3123? Would you identify yourself for the tape, please? And you have about
30 seconds
or less.
Kim Kang, Public Policy Director for Pacer Center and Chair for the Coalition for Children with Disabilities. And simply, I just want to say that the Coalition supports this bill. We appreciate the work, collaborative work of the St. Paul and Minneapolis school districts and Representative Morgan's leadership on the bill. So we do fully support it, think it's a win-win for schools and parents.
Thank you, Ms. Kane. Representative Morgan, would you like to renew your motion on House File 3123?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Representative Morgan renews his motion that House File 3123 be recommended to pass as amended and be returned to the Finance Committee. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the bill is recommended to pass and to be returned to the Finance Committee. Members, we stand adjourned.